Welcome to the Blue Hoop Podcast, produced by Basketball Victoria. I'm Rob Cole, the Coach Development Officer for Basketball Victoria. On the home bench, we have High Performance Coach for Vic Metro, Mike Zeppel.
Back on the home bench, mate, twice.
And on the away bench, we have High Performance Coach for Vic Country, Justin Shuler.
100% record on the away team right now, so we're doing okay.
And we started early. Welcome, guys. We're in for week two. It turns out that all your emails couldn't keep us away, and we have come back for episode number two. Again, if you've got anything you want us to discuss or if you want to continue the conversation, you can find all our details on the Basketball Victoria website, and we're happy to interact with you guys as much as we can, and hopefully this can be of some use to your coaching as well. Topic for this week is a loaded one. Shooting. It starts early. It's probably the thing that every kid wants to be good at, if they can be good at one thing other than dunking, but some of us just aren't blessed athletically to be able to do that, me being one. And it turns out I was a terrible shooter anyway, so I probably needed to pay a little bit more attention in this area. Where do you start? Like, everyone's got a different technique. Tall kids will shoot differently to small kids. From the time kids pick up a basketball, they want to, like, you walk into any gym and the kids will walk straight to the three-point line and start turfing up shots from everywhere. What are the things we're looking to teach from the ground level up, I suppose, with their shooters?
I think with this thing, it's also, there's a philosophical chat around, can you teach everyone the same way, or is everyone unique with shooting technique? Like, before we get into the detail, what do you guys think around that?
Yeah, everybody's a little bit different. Like, shape, body shape, length, size, hand size, finger length, all of that's different for every athlete. So you definitely have to take all of that into consideration. There's no one golf swing. Everyone's golf swing looks completely different. And I think that's important with shooting. There are some things around shooting that make sense for everybody. You know, your release, you know, shooting the ball at the ring or away from the ring, little things like that are pretty consistent. But I think it's hard to try and tell everyone to shoot exactly the same way.
Yeah, I'm much the same. I think there's probably a few key 3 or 4 points that I'd probably want all people to have. But I think it's going to be different whether that's a big starting out or a smaller guard that probably might struggle for strength. I don't think you're going to teach everyone the same way, but I think there are probably some core competencies you'd want along the way.
It's definitely over my time in teaching shooting, and for me it's the master skill. Like, it's the number one thing that I value more than anything else in our practice environment, and definitely the programs that I've led. And to me, it's a few key elements that you need to really hone in on and then build the individual aspect from there. One of the greatest things when Ian Stacker was leading the Institute was bringing in the set, load, shot mentality, and that's something still today that I kind of preach, set being where you're looking over the basketball, the hand positioning, that chest height, and how you hold the ball at that point. The load being where you're looking underneath the basketball, so raising that ball up high enough so that you can get into your shot, and then the actual shot. And to me, over time, the thing that matters most on that is just the follow-through. Mm. Index finger to the rim, maintaining that follow-through till you get to it. You know, I've heard people coach it, you know, with middle finger. I've heard, you know, different, but to me, over time, that's been the thing that I've kind of figured gets the best results out of that. One of the other great things I saw from a starting point, to go back to your question, was Brett Brown teaching how to just get that natural feel of the ball, and that was to dribble the basketball on the floor and then basically lift it up so you're in a shooting stance. And his point was the only way you can do that is get your elbow underneath the ball. So a combination of all those things, I think, is kind of where you need to head with it.
Yeah, I saw a similar thing with Brett as well. Like, after he started with just dribble the ball, it was literally throw the ball to a partner. Just lob it up and try and catch it. And the only way they could catch it, especially the younger kids, was to have their elbow under the ball. So it really emphasised, you know, get your elbow underneath, get your fingers back and snap the wrist or lock the wrist.
Yeah, and Justin's point around the value of shooting, it's really a point of difference.
Like, absolutely.
For a player who may be subpar athletically, it's your chance to get to the floor. For a player that has athleticism, it's your point of difference to become the best player on the floor. For people with size, if you can play inside and outside, you're now a mismatch and can play multiple positions. So shooting is that point of difference, and we probably don't value it as much.
I tell my athletes all the time, mate, you can't shoot, you can't play.
It makes a massive difference. That was the message to our NITP cohort this year. Like, you have to value shooting. And I think it's in an international style of game, you have to be able to make shots.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things now that we start looking at, well, is that volume related? So is that something that you can have a broken technique, but if you get enough shots up, you will eventually become a good shooter? Or is there a couple of things in there you sit there and say, hey, you will never be a good shooter if you shoot the ball flat?
I think there's an element of technique that you have to take into consideration. Teaching points around the ball sitting in the palm of your hand or out of the palm of your hand. If you shoot volume shots with the ball in the palm of your hand for the rest of your life, there's going to become a game or a level of competition where you will not be able to get that shot off and in. So there are some things around technique. I know Justin spoke about the index finger. A poor habit I see juniors is they do shoot the ball out the palm of their hand and they cup the ball, and it doesn't provide the same feel for a shooter. So volume shooting, incredibly important. If you can have a standard of technique that will stand up in a national standard game or a VJBL game or VC Friday night game, then that is important when you're talking volume shooting.
Yep. And it's one of those things too, I think, where players go and shoot and they view that as their practice time, but they don't necessarily shoot at game pace as well, which is incredibly valuable for mine. I mean, it's one thing to work on your form shooting and things that go with that, but unless you're taking shots at game pace, you're probably not really going to move the needle a whole lot in terms of how well you progress as a shooter either.
Yeah, I guess my belief is you need all of it. So over time, I've spent more time on starting from the end of your shot and peeling it back. So we would start with the actual shot, working your wrist flick, then go on load to shot, then set to load to shot and building that up, then adding footwork in a straight line. Just to get the muscle memory and the breakdown of the fundamental skill. But I think you need volume shooting. I think you need contested shooting. I think you need the whole lot. And again, it's stages of development, but being able to have the consistency of getting all of that, I think, is ultimately what makes you a better shooter.
It's interesting you say you've worked from the end result back. What do you do with that, Mike? Are you the same way, or do you go from the start and build forwards?
I generally built my shot as well from the start and moved out. And I tell our athletes, like, the way you shoot the ball from 3 feet is probably the way you're going to shoot the ball from 23 feet. And I think a really good, and I do it with our athletes on the metro side, is shooting, one-hand form shooting, two-hand form shooting from close to the basket. You have to be pretty confident of that to be able to shoot the contested threes that Justin spoke about. And that goes to the message, like, you have to be able to do all of it. And you have to prioritise it as a part of your player development. Like, there's no one thing that you can get really good at. It all comes, back to the same thing. That's a massive work to become a really good shooter.
I think one thing as coaches we can do as well, like, an athlete's never going to value something unless we value it.
Right.
And then act on that preaching. So if we are harping, shooting matters, but then we're not investing time into shooting in practice environment, if I'm that athlete, maybe I'm not buying into that. It's the old free throw thing. Make sure you get your free throws done. Well, but if you're not going to stand there and spend time with them shooting their free throws, does that athlete really value it? And I think that's an important message to take away, is if you're not investing in it, then the athlete's not going to invest in it.
Yeah, definitely. With the younger athletes, so some will start with a size 5, some will start with a size 6, depending on what time they come into the game. It might be a size 7. Is there any value in having a smaller ball early just to get their hand position correct, do you think?
I think weight of ball does matter. Like, you'll see kids come in with a size 7 and just heave it up. One of the best things out of Adelaide was that the rings could get dropped to 8 foot. And I know, when I was at North Adelaide there, we would spend so much time at all ages shooting on the 8 foot ring just till they got their technique. So whether it's height of rim, whether it's ball weight, whatever the athlete is able to do in a fundamentally sound way, I think aids to the ability long term.
Yep. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, I agree. Even when you pick up a size 6 ball now as an adult, like, the ball sits in your hand really well and you can shoot with pretty good technique. I do think it is important. And we're talking about, someone made a great point, I can't remember, it might have been you, Robbie, you always make great points, was that we ask our 12-year-old girls or our 13-year-old girls to play with a size 6, and we also ask our Olympian women to play with a size 6 ball at 27, 28 years of age. So hand size definitely plays into it when we're talking about shooting the basketball and just how you develop as an athlete and mature as a person.
Definitely. I think that's far too logical to have come from me, in all honesty. I think you've stolen that from someone else. But I think hand position certainly does come into it. I mean, we talk a lot about having the T with the thumbs on the ball as we first pick that up. Being able to pick the ball up, I think for a lot of young athletes, is probably the first problem, because you have a lot of kids that will put both thumbs behind the ball and push out as if it's a chest pass. And because I think you pass the ball differently to how you shoot the ball, kids get a little bit confused with their hand position as well.
I'd say the biggest issue with shooting as well is often thumbing the ball with that second hand. Like, you know, when you're breaking down maybe a rough technique, often that's the first thing, you know. So there is something pretty big in that. I also think for me is not spreading your fingers on the shot. Like the kids that are just almost trying to punch after they've shot it, you know, like just having soft fingers, being able to have more touch on it. And that again comes back to hand positioning, being able to spread the fingers on that ball.
And that's all about, like I tell our athletes, basketball's played with open hands. Like when you're passing the ball, catching the ball, you know, bouncing the ball, open your hands up. Yeah. I think that's really important because that helps you cover the ball without thinking you have to get two hands behind the ball.
Yeah.
So it's a great teaching point.
Yeah, definitely. I remember my under-14s coach actually brought in like a little frisbee-looking thing, which I had on my guide hand, and forced me to shoot the ball with one hand. And I've never made as many shots in my life as I did with that thing. And granted, it's a fairly low bar anyway, but I made more shots.
Professional career of yours after that really paid off.
Yeah, I peaked fairly early, to be honest with you. But that was fantastic for me, just to really reinforce that you must shoot the ball with one hand, and it forced you to follow through, and it forced you to snap your wrist and everything that goes with it. And I know both you guys are very much index finger on the needle of the ball.
Not so much on the needle for me. Like, just to me, index fingers like throwing a tennis ball. Like where I point is where the ball's going. So I'm not worrying effectively which finger touches the ball last, but the actual follow through, if I'm pointing at the ring, chances are the ball's going towards the rim. If I'm pointing to the left, well, it's going to be a left. So that's more been just a little cue for athletes to kind of constantly think about just holding that follow through till it's in the net.
Yeah, and it is a good cue. And I know a number of NBA shooting coaches teach index finger to the middle of the ball, and it's a similar kind of philosophy. Like your index finger is your target line, and where that index finger finishes is where the ball is most likely going to go. So their philosophy would be, you know, index finger in the middle of the ball. If you shoot the middle of the ball will go straight. So it's interesting. The one thing that I do see junior athletes, and again, it comes back to probably a strength thing early on, is the shooting hand is dominant to the inside of the ball. So even the middle finger is to the inside of the ball, and that does create some issues. So again, if you spread your fingers wide enough, spread your hand, and you can cover enough of that the space on the ball, then you won't feel like you have to shoot with two hands.
The best shooters in the world, though, when you hear them talk about their shot, they talk about how it's just comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's about, you know, comfort in the hand, comfort in that low point, comfort in the release and the timing. You know, that getting to that point's obviously what, as coaches, we've got to help out. But once a shooter becomes a great shooter, it becomes just that effortless comment, you know, like it just looks as one motion. It's the same shot every single time. And I think that's something that gets lost in juniors, is trying to make the shot the same every single time.
Absolutely.
You know, the difference in variation and that. And ultimately understanding that they're the ones that control that development. You can have a coach telling you every time, until you physically start feeling that thing the same every time, that's when you're not going to be able to build that success.
And that's important for the athlete to understand. The amount of shots it will take you to become an elite shooter, you can't have a coach there the whole time.
Yeah, that's
right. It's impossible. So you have to be, as coaches and teachers, we have to teach solid technique, but then the athlete has to, you know, take the feedback that they get from every shot that they shoot to make sure that their technique is consistent, so they're shooting good shots, whether they're technique related, contested shooting related, volume related, and it's consistent habits.
Yeah, definitely. I think Dave Herbert, I was talking to, who's the Geelong Super Women's coach, about shooting. He tends to have some really good shooters come out of his program. He's really big on which eye dominant you are as well, in terms of where you are bringing the ball. Is it, when you look at someone like Lonzo Ball, who pretty much shoots it from the opposite side of his body, it's not necessarily a technique you teach, but the sheer volume of how many shots he gets up has probably ingrained that technique over years as well. Whether he can get it off at the NBA level consistently, we're probably about to find out, but it's probably not a beautiful technique in terms of, we're looking fundamentally, I don't know that we'd be encouraging kids to shoot that way if they were starting their technique as well. In terms of how soon do you let kids shoot from further out? It's probably one of the bigger questions.
Straight away.
You're happy for them to just jack threes early?
I think there's two massive parts in that. There's practice environment and game environment. So practice environment should be about fundamentals, development of skill, being able to stretch that thing out to a consistent point. Game environment comes down to your style of play. So talking a bit country-wise, we promote floor spacing at under 12s. So floor spacing is the three-point line as a reference point. Every single one of those athletes will know when that ball comes out, so from the post or off penetration to a kick out, they can catch and shoot it, or they can make the extra pass. And what we try and get at that understanding is make the extra pass, now you've got a re-penetration line. But the spacing is the key element. Now, that does mean three-point shots go up. And what I've seen over Jamboree in the last 3 years, since we let them shoot threes, is that percentage is going up every single year. So there's two massive parts to it. There's practice environment and game environment, and allowing them to have the confidence and freedom to do it, provided it's the right type of shot, I think is the big part of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the recent under 14 nationals that were played here in Melbourne, there were some pretty good three-point shooters. And they would have had to have started to practice that three-point shooting way earlier than their top age under 14 year, yeah, or bottom age under 14 year. So I think that's important. Justin's point to spacing is critical. All good shooters shoot good shots. They're not falling out of bounds. Yeah. They're not contested. They're not bobbling the ball. They're balanced. They set, load, and shoot the ball. That's good shooting. And I think sometimes the glamorous shot is the one that's the fall out of bounds, contested and one, whatever it is. But good shooters shoot great shots in rhythm based on team spacing. So the more rhythm shots you want to create for your team, the better your chances of having good shooters on the floor too, yep, with or without talking technique.
I think the other thing from, if I put my under 17 hat on, is getting athletes to understand the value of the three-point line and the value of the free throw line. Being the two most critical parts on the international stage of, you've got to be elite at those two areas. The higher competitions that these kids will play in, you've got to be good at those two areas. Our under 18 girls were able to get a gold medal this year because they were the best in the tournament at those two spots. So just that value and understanding, I think the earlier kids understand that, the better off that it's going to be.
No, I don't disagree at all. And the value of the three-point line is huge, and we're starting to see it filter down to AJCs and everything that goes with it now. Like, I know, Mike, you were looking at the 16 girls
16
shooting
girls
percentages from this year.
Yeah, so it was collectively across the women's competition in Perth. It was 34% from the two, 19% from the three, and just over 60% from the foul line. So the numbers weren't great. And if you do shoot those percentages in a game, there's a good chance that you're going to struggle to get that win. So shooting even at our elite level needs work. So it's definitely something that can get addressed at clubs, high-performance programs, as we start to work on our competition and elite athletes here in Victoria.
But the rebounding numbers were pretty good over that tournament, I'm led to believe.
It had to have been.
Yeah,
had to have been.
Didn't have much of a choice there. So when we start talking about catching and shooting and everything that goes, I mean, creating your own shot off the dribble is very different to catch and shoot. I mean, yep, at a catch and shoot level, you want to be a really elite shooter. Any thoughts on dipping the ball? So when I say dipping the ball, it's like catch it and then dropping it before you come up, or you have to catch it and then rise up straight away? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, a lot of that comes back to your natural feel for when you catch the ball as well. Dipping the ball, like anything, has its pros and cons. There have been some really good shooters that have dipped the ball. There's been a lot of good shooters. The most recent one that I can think of out of Victoria, Gabe Hadley, did not dip the ball very much.
He had a pretty good coach from the age of...
And he was poorly coached. So there was no dip in that shot. But there's a lot of guys and a lot of girls that you do see with a dip that are still able to use that dip to help with their jump shot. So,
is that power related, do you think, the dip?
It possibly, or feel.
Yep.
Feel related, power related.
I think it's also how you coach from an early age. Like, I joke about Gabe, but we got him really young, right, and he was only taught one way. To me, my view on the dip has changed a little bit over time. I believe it's important we coach it to not dip, because the less you dip, the quicker your shot is, the better chance you've got getting it off at any level. But with time and space, I think the dip's quite valuable from creating some rhythm in your shot. So to me, again, if you can throw them in the deep end straight away and be able to now, okay, I can just catch it, load it, shoot it, no dip at all. But then if I've got some time and space, I can get some rhythm off that. I think that's a great thing. So I think you kind of need both, really. And
like with a lot of things.
And the best shooters have that. Like Paddy Mills, to me, is the one that comes to mind for me. You watch him getting closed out at really quick, he doesn't dip. You give him time and space, he's got the biggest dip around. And both result pretty much in the same outcome. So, you know, that's kind of the way I think we've got to try and maybe think about whether we coach it or whether we don't.
I think a lot of that, too, comes back to the pass.
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, realistically, if you're getting hit on the hands every time, well, you won't have too many problems anyway. You can shoot it however you want it. But with defense being what it is and closeouts coming, sometimes the pass is down around knee level or shin level and you inherently dip just because of where you've been forced to catch the ball as well.
Again, it's something that we need to value.
Yep.
Like, in practice, how many clubs, how many teams spend 2-3 minutes on just passing? And how much do the athletes know that this is valued? Because with good passing, we get rhythm jump shots. With rhythm jump shots, we get makes, as opposed to trying to pick the ball off our shoelaces and figuring out how to make a bucket.
The thing I'd throw in there, though, is the game isn't perfect. So I think being able to shoot adaptive shooting is a skill set as well. That's part of your reps, part of your contested, like being able to catch the ball a little off to the right and bring it back to your load and get it off. Like, I think that's something the elite level kids have. You know, DJ Vasiljevic, didn't matter where you threw it to him, got the same shot off every single time. So, you know, that's definitely agree that passing can improve out of sight.
Elite shooters practice that.
But yeah, like, being able to get that off is pretty important.
A really good Steve Nash drill on YouTube of him doing that, catching passes that were off target and getting them back to his shooting pocket and getting the ball off. So you practice that, absolutely.
Yep. So I think there's less excuses for kids to not get up shots in their own time. Like, it's one of those things where it's great to have a coach sit there and correct you, but they can also correct themselves. Like, self-evaluation is becoming a really strong part of how athletes improve as well. Just in regards to, like, the use of video technology, like, every kid has access to, like, a phone, an iPad, or whatever the case may be, where they can video their shot. What are the sort of the tools that you would be looking for those kids to evaluate as well?
There's a great one I still use, which is free, Coach My Vid. You know, just get mum or dad to record it and you can slow it down, you can play it back. Like, I use that at every single level. Been using that with some of the NPL guys the last few weeks, like, just for instant feedback, pretty important. You know, the other part, though, just with the technology side, is tracking your makes and takes. Just knowing what clip you're shooting each week. Like, our country athletes need to make around 500 makes a week, but I also want them to know how many takes they took. You know, if I'm making 500 out of 2,000, well, you know,
I'm a
shooter, not a hitter, you know. Yeah. Like, but so using technology for that as well, just to make sure you've got some way of tracking your data so that, am I improving? Am I staying the same? Am I declining?
Yeah. I think what you feel you shoot like and what you see yourself shoot like can be really different. So I think that's, that instant feedback. I like playing really bad golf. And the first time you see your golf swing on video, it's like, there's no way that's how
scares
I swing.
You.
Yeah, that's not, how I swing. But it's important. It's important because I can tell you, you're shooting the ball flat because, you know, your elbow's not above your eye line as many times as I need to. But until you see that physically on film, you probably won't believe me.
There's a massive one that I get kids to watch when they shoot free throws is have a look at where they finish. They finish on their heels or do they finish on their toes? Because kind of over time for me, the ones that finish on heels are missing. The ones that finish on their toes are making. But you just using that as a way of using technology to track as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Pretty important.
I mean, everyone's going to be a little different, and we've talked about a lot to this point. We'll look to wrap this up fairly soon, but where are you telling kids to aim? Like, because you could survey a team, and you'll probably get four different answers. You'll get front of the rim, back of the rim, 2 feet above the rim, middle of the rim. Like, I mean, what's the perfect answer for that?
I think I've got it. Yeah. Brett Maher, who I think is still one of the best shooters our country's ever had, once told me that you need to look at the back of the rim wherever you are on the floor. I did that, and I wasn't anywhere near the world's best shooter, but it definitely helped my shooting. I then heard Larry Bird say the same thing, that he had a spot on the back of the rim wherever he was, and that's what he'd look at. So I've coached that ever since. To me, a short shot is an unforgivable shot. And a lot of the drills that I've kind of designed over time have been where you get a penalty if it falls short. So for me, it's definitely eyes on the back of the rim. But the other part to it is sighting your target for as long as possible. So a lot of kids will just shoot it off a split-second look. To me, especially if you're handling the ball, the longer you're on target, the better chance you've got of making that shot.
And the other interesting one is athletes that shoot the ball and then track the ball with their eyes through the air, as opposed to just locking it on the target. As a junior, I was definitely one that tracked the ball through the air. It was just a habit, and I guess I felt comfortable with it. As I got older and older, I began to really lock in on the target and not track the ball. But I've seen NBA players and WNBA players do it both ways, elite shooters do it both ways. I think that's another feel thing at the end of the day as well.
It's all valuable information. So we'll leave that there for today. Any questions you've got about shooting or anything you'd like us to touch on one of the other podcasts, please let us know. You can find all our contact details on the Basketball Victoria website.
I'll just jump in there, Rob. There's also a clinic that we did at the Jamboree, which has some real basic fundamental shooting stuff done. I'm pretty sure it's up on the BV website, so feel free to grab that and plagiarise away.
Excellent. Coaching is stealing, as we always do where we can. So any other information you need, by all means, drop us a line, and we'll catch you guys next week.
All right, we've got my example for this week's shot clock. Zepp, you ready?
Ready, mate. Go.
Okay, first team coach?
The Thomas Carr College Senior Boys.
Elite. Favourite NBA team?
My New Orleans Pelicans.
Only one fan there.
Yeah, me.
Favourite NBL team?
Anyone that you're playing against on the weekend, mate, I will go for.
Favourite WNBL team?
We'll stay at the State Centre, the Boomers.
Most used coaching phrase?
Keep the ball in front.
Coaching superstitions?
As a head coach, not to get to the floor too early.
Coach you always steal from?
Like a lot of what Billy Donovan does.
Favourite coaching website?
Bob Starkey, the assistant at Texas A&M Women, has a really good blog called Hoop Thoughts.
And favourite coaching podcast?
The Positive Coaching Alliance is pretty good.
Not Blue Hoop, mate?
I like Blue Hoop as well.
Yeah, thank you very much.
For the second half of today's podcast, I'd like to welcome Durham McInnes from Core Advantage. Thanks for joining us, Durham.
Thanks for having me.
No problems at all. Most people have seen you around everywhere. Core Advantage is massive at the moment on Facebook. Your social media following is fantastic. Anyone that doesn't follow these guys online, strongly recommend it. There's a whole heap of resources out there for coaches, for their athletes. Everything that you can want for your athletes is on there. Incredibly accessible guys. So if you haven't checked that out, just Core Advantage on Facebook. Any other social medias you want to run as well?
Yeah, so we're on Instagram. We don't do heaps. So just a few pictures here and there. And our YouTube channel is probably our biggest.
Yep.
In terms of getting the... having a catalogue of everything we've got, the YouTube channel is pretty good as well.
Yeah, awesome. It's like I said, guys, strongly suggest you go and check that thing out. It's going to be fantastic. So you've worked with Basketball Victoria. How long are we looking now? Sort of 10-ish?
Around 10 years, I think,
been a long time. I met you first at a pre-season camp.
I had a full head of hair.
I feel your pain. Mine was a lot thicker and a hell of a lot darker as well when I first met you,
It was a long time ago,
It was. But, I mean, your role has been extensive throughout Basketball Victoria as well. It's working with athletes, working with coaches, trying to teach people how to do things the right way. But what are your sort of roles within basketball at the moment? Sure. So who are you working with at the moment?
So I'm pretty lucky. At the junior level, I'm the athletic development manager for Basketball Victoria. So that's with all the state teams, NITP, NPP. So there's that. And then there's a lot of we have partnerships with various clubs. So we have a lot of kids coming through our doors from various different clubs around Melbourne. And I'm also the high performance manager for the Melbourne Boomers in the WBL. So they're really nice. And I serve on. And the nice thing is. Melbourne Boomers is sponsored by Deakin University, and we have a strong relationship with Deakin, separate to that because we have a lot of the interns come to our place, but I also serve on Deakin Uni's Sports Science Advisory Board. And they're the number one sports science school in the world, which is pretty cool.
Not a bad thing to have.
Yeah, so we're in a pretty good spot. It's pretty nice. And the really nice thing is you get to have athletes who you worked with as 14, 15-year-olds come through and train them as pros. And so, like, at the moment, we've got Jenna O'Hay in our team with the Boomers, and she's now 30, And she was a teenager when I first trained her. And so that's really cool, seeing that overall career development.
Yeah, absolutely. And you sort of see how bodies develop over time as well. It's the whole thing we talk about. Not everyone is built the same way.
Yeah.
Everyone's got to be trained differently. But it's great to get some continuity with what they do really as well for the athletes.
So I'm pretty lucky. Good fun.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always fun in basketball. So how many basketballers do you guys see in your gym? So you guys are based down in Upwick South, and you've got a warehouse you guys converted into a gym as well. And we do some coach ed training down there as well. Mm. And all our NITP coaches go through. But how many basketballers do you actually deal with?
Well, we have over 300 athletes, and the majority of them are basketballers. So it would be 250 plus. Wow. So we're pretty confident we're training more basketballers, strength and conditioning wise, than anyone else in the country.
Yeah, awesome.
A bunch.
Yeah, that's massive. Like, what are the common reasons, I suppose, people come and see you in the first place? It's, I mean, you deal with kids as young as sort of 9 and 10, I'm assuming, all the way up?
Yeah, we'll see kids as young as 9 and 10, but we actually, we won't take them on as ongoing athletes till 13. Because we found the attention span, it was harder,
I get that.
You know?
Yep.
And so 13 upwards is our main age range. We have two different categories of athletes. You've got athletes that are physically robust and they just want to be better. They want to dunk, they want to hit harder, they want to run faster, they want to get better laterally. Particularly if they've just come back from America and they've played over there and they come back, I've got to get better laterally.
Yep.
I got beaten too much.
Yep.
And so we love working with those guys. And they're often relatively straightforward in that you have to assess them and so forth, but they've got that robust body that you can put work into and the results come pretty quickly.
Yep.
And then the other category are we call our pathology clients, who are athletes that have got an injury or they've got something that needs to be strong because they're worried they're going to get an injury. And we also get a large amount of second-borns.
Okay.
Second-born kids from... Yeah. We've had an injury-plagued older brother. And the parents like, "This the second time around, we're going to get this...
We're going to get this right.
Yeah.
We're going to sort of give them a bit more of a chance, I suppose. Mm. It's...
And then some who are a bit of a mixed bag.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. It's really interesting to watch kids develop over time because, I mean, it's probably changed a little bit. We've put a lot of time into skill development, which is a really big thing from our end. But we take that back further and we're looking at skill development now that, okay, it's... One thing, if they can't shoot, if they can't catch, it doesn't matter if they can't shoot. So we've got to really strip it back. And I'm assuming you guys do exactly the same thing when they start running, when they start lifting and things like that. Right back to the basics with you guys.
So, I mean, the most fundamental thing we go right back to is what are their goals? What do they want to get out of it? Because the results really vary. So some kids come along to us and they get amazing results.
Yep.
And some kids come along and they get terrible results.
Yep.
And the variable isn't how we're coaching them, because we coach them all. Like, they're all VIPs.
Yep.
But the variable is the level of application, the level of attention to detail. So it's really important to get to the heart of why they're with us first. Because if they are locked in on their goals and if they are consistent, results are guaranteed. No one's ever trained hard and not got great results, particularly in strength and conditioning. It's very fair. Life isn't always fair, but strength and conditioning is very fair.
Yep.
So step one, goals, and then we do a chronological injury history. I find that to be really valuable because what often happens is someone come along and they'll have rolled their left ankle when they were 13.
Yep.
They didn't quite rehab it properly, and so it didn't get its dorsiflexion, its ankle bend back that well, so it's a bit restricted. And then at 14, they developed a knee problem, and then at 15, they had a hip problem. It's like it's just working its way up the chain, that restriction. So if you take the chronological, you actually get to see kind of what happened. Then after that, we do a biomechanical and sports analysis. So we'll find out what's bending, what isn't bending, what is bending. Are their glutes switched on? Is their core switched on? And I think you saw ages ago at Eltham one time.
Yep, absolutely.
And then we move into the performance side, which is sprinting. And then jumping, and we video that, so we can actually send themselves in slow-mo. And then from that, those three things, the goals, their history, and how they present to us biomechanically, we then make up a program based on what they need for their stuff.
That sounds awesome. I'm guessing you guys see a lot of rehab-type injuries, though.
Yeah.
You get a stack of kids that have done an ACL and are trying to build it up so that they don't do it again, dislocations and everything like that, just to try and make kids better.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things you can do before that, though.
There's heaps you can do.
Yep.
Yeah. So much you can do, yeah. The big thing I think that everyone can do better is just establishing basic mobility
Yep.
It's not exciting.
It doesn't sound appealing in all honesty.
But, you know, like I'll say to kids, well, if you want to dunk, step one, make sure your ankles have proper dorsiflex. Make sure they can have, you know, a decent amount of movement, because that's the spring.
Yep.
You know, so it's that kind of stuff. So it's not, sometimes I'll say with the broccoli of sport.
Yeah, and it is one of those things. I mean, kids are all the same. They pick up a basketball and the first shot they'll take will be a three, or they'll try and dunk straight off the bat without warming up, without doing anything else. And it's a massive problem, I think, in our sport, because our kids are constantly broken.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of it has to do with they're trying to serve so many different people along the way. They have a domestic team, they have a championship team, they probably have NITP. The good kids have state and Oz stuff as well. Yeah. Then they've probably got school on the side as well. And then they might do another sport. And by that stage, it's like, well, how do we actually fix this?
So the load is high. And sometimes it's difficult to do much about it as well.
Yep.
I think the first thing is just to attend to load tolerance. Like if you are more flexible, if you are stronger and you move better, you'll tolerate that load better.
Yep.
In an ideal world, you fix everything all in one day.
Yep.
But that'd
be nice.
But I think attending to load tolerance is a really good starting point.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, with most kids that have a lot going on, obviously, what would you recommend to sort of start looking at how much you're doing and where you can get a break and what you can be doing instead of being on court and things like that? There's a lot of stuff they can do off the court. It doesn't require a basketball or a court or anything like that.
Yeah. So the first thing I'd say is we get a surprising amount of kids who come in and they've got some form of an overuse injury. And I'll say, okay, map out your schedule. And I'll go through the whole schedule. And they'll be doing like two domestic games for two different teams because they're talented enough that they're playing up at age groups.
Yep.
And I say, well, you should just do one domestic. Like just, you know,
try
and the teams that you're going to play for that aren't going to develop you particularly, they're the areas to cut you on. So that would be step one. And avoid extracurricular stuff in terms of don't also start playing netball at the same time as you're playing for five different basketball teams.
That's
the obvious stuff. But then in terms of what they can do on their own, bit of foam rolling. That's a really good way to help release off trigger points. A little bit of stretching, just a pinch of it.
Yep.
And then you can do some basic glute activation and some squats. Really simple stuff that takes, you know, foam rolling is going to take you 5 minutes a day.
Yep.
It's not much, but it just keeps the tissue quality better. We have on our YouTube channel, we've got a section, warm-up 2.0.
Yep.
And so we've made instructional videos of how to do all that stuff. Because it's amazing how many times I'll have groups of athletes, we'll do teams, we'll come through our facility, and they'll all bring their rollers in. And I'll say, so you all own a roller, which is great.
Yeah.
But that's the first step.
Yep.
The second step is using it properly, and
Absolutely. They
don't do that as much. So basic foam rolling, a little bit of stretching, a little bit of core activation. And then I think the simplest thing is, you know, do some body weight squats, hip width apart, not too low, not too shallow, just medium. And then some calf raises. I mean, I reckon calf raises are the easiest performance enhancement injury reduction thing you can do, because if all other things being equal, if your calves are strong, they will absorb kinetic energy better, so you'll land better and move better, and you'll sprint better and jump better. And that can be three sets of 10 is so much better than nothing.
And that just needs to be body weight, correct?
Yeah.
You don't need anything.
Do that one. People say you need a step. You don't even need a step. Like if you just load your weight through the ball of your foot and then extend up down, like it's
pretty simple. And you can't get injured doing that, but you can prevent a lot of injury by doing it. And that's a really strong part of it, I feel like, is that people get really worked up about, geez, our kids do a lot, they're always on court, they're always doing this. And it's like, well, if you put time into your body just as much as you do into your game, you'll be able to do more things.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to look after your prehab and your rehab.
Yeah, exactly.
From everything.
And
it is difficult because we all want a piece of the athletes and they get torn in 15 different directions, but it is one of those things where I think a lot of our athletes need to sit down, map out their week, look at what they're doing and say, well, okay, where can I get some time in to, one, just rest, and two, take care of your body.
They should have one day of bone rest per day, per week.
Right? Per week, yeah.
The thing is, you can get everything else really strong. But there's nothing you can do. The bones can only take so much. They need a day for the little osteocytes, the little building blocks to regenerate. So if you're looking at a weekly schedule, minimum of one day a week. In a perfect world, you've got two. That's harder to come by.
Yep.
You do a little bit of strength training a couple of times a week. And that could be at home, you know, some push-ups, squats, calf raises.
Yep.
Like, it doesn't take much. Like, a small stimulus makes the body quite a lot stronger.
Okay.
That's not going to give you... So that's going to give you the muscular benefit, which is really good.
Yep.
That's what I would call kind of that level one benefit. Proper resistance training, like in the gym, like we do, gives you that benefit. Plus, what it gives you is the neural benefit, where your brain gets better at switching muscles on, so you can be more explosive and jump a lot higher and move better. But that base level, if we got everyone in Victoria up to that kind of level one of, you can run pretty good, you can land well, you've got good mobility, and you have a basic amount of strength, that's a pretty good place to get to.
Absolutely. And again, we'll prevent injuries. And that's the big thing that I think people get really hung up on, strength training and, you know, we don't need to do it. And it's like, well, actually, if you can get your strength training down to a point where you have great core fitness for a start, all your muscles work when they're supposed to work. Yeah. I mean, first time I met you, you were doing stuff, and I'm sitting there, what do you mean, turn on muscles? Like, this, this made no sense to me whatsoever. And
it's,
you sort of
it's pretty mainstream now, though, isn't it?
It is. Everyone talks about it. It's like flicking on a light switch. You know, you, when you need those to work, you need to do something to make them work to start off with. And it's really daunting, I think, to start off. You don't understand what it's about or anything like that, but it is valuable for athletes
and,
to have.
And I think you can take it. I think sometimes I have people will sort of question it. Oh, is this, you know, is this really worth it? Does it really work? And my thing is always, well, look at the NBA. If you are Matty Dellavedova, you're playing for Milwaukee, you have like you've a team of experts. The payroll for the people that look after the strength, conditioning, athletic development, they have probably, it's probably like a $1.5 million payroll just for the people looking after him, let alone the facility. You know, that's per year. Like, they've got brilliant people there, and they, you've got people who are dedicated to helping you. And they spend all that money. Like, NBA clubs aren't trying to find ways to get rid of money.
No.
They're still businesses.
They like having it.
You know, and they spend that money because they know it's enhancing their investment. So they've got that player investment. And it's the same, you know, the AFL are leaders at that. The good AFL clubs spend a tremendous amount of money on getting personnel in who can then help keep their athletes healthy.
Makes sense.
So, yeah, it's good business for those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, and we spoke a couple of weeks ago, you came and presented to all our directors of coaching, which is fantastic in terms of we get them all in a room together, we sort of go over what the curriculum looks like for the coming year, as well as you get to sort of talk about, well, okay, here's how you can better prepare your athletes, because it's a really awkward time of year at the moment, so you might have been playing for 6 months straight, you might have had NITP or state littered in there as well, a couple of camps here and there, your domestic stuff still rolls on, your school stuff still rolls on. Then all of a sudden you get to finals time at VJBL. It's like, well, your season might have ended 6 weeks ago. Yeah. Your season might not have ended at all up until the grand final. And then probably 2 weeks later, you're into trials.
It's so varied. Like one of our kids, Tess Hill and Emerson, they won nationals, so the under 14 nationals. So that was Saturday night. And tryouts were yesterday.
Yep,
so they had a 3 day off season.
Yeah, you know? It just doesn't make sense.
And, but then there's others who've got a really long gap. You know, so it could be up to 6 weeks of not doing that much.
Yeah, and it's really difficult for those guys too, because it's not one size fits all. Mm. And I think as coaches, we can sometimes say, hey, everyone should be doing this, and that's not logical. It's every player is going to be a little bit different.
And I think all around that, I think parents and athletes have a well-meaning sense of, well, you've worked really hard all season, you should take some time off. Yep. And I totally get where they're coming from with that, because that just sounds logical.
Yeah.
But the issue is that it should be some time of it, not off, but time of less. Because if you go from 15 hours a week of sport to 0 hours, and then you go back up to 15 hours, that's when you're begging for trouble.
Yep.
So if you can, I think people often will focus on the, in terms of the load on the ceiling of how much work they're putting in during the week.
Yep.
But if you can be focused also on the floor, because any ceiling is only, its height is always relative to the floor.
Yep.
So you've got to maintain some floor.
Yeah.
And so we've been pushing that a lot more the last probably 18 months. Yep. And we've noticed the athletes who take it on board do way better. Okay. So it's a bit like snakes and ladders.
Yeah.
You know? Yep.
Absolutely.
So I think it's really beneficial just to maintain some load. And so you might not be able to get to a court, but at least you can do some repeat effort sprints in the park.
Yep.
I feel like I'm plugging our resources a lot, but we made up a movie. So Jake, and it's not me, it's Jacob. Yep. Jacob Tobin, one of my senior coaches, who's amazing with this stuff. So he made up a movie on how to do repeat effort sprints over 20 meters, and it's a really good instructional one.
Yep.
And we made up a drill called Game Fit, which is kind of something I made up in the first version back in 06 for the Sapphires when I was the strength coach for the Australian Sapphires. And we had a team of athletes all over the world. We needed to keep them fit, ready for World Championships. And so it's just a drill that involves sprinting and shuffling, basically.
Yep.
But in a game-like intensity. And so we've made a movie up of that as well.
Excellent.
So if you've got off-season where you're not doing much, it's time to put in a bit of that stuff.
Yep. And there's really limited off-seasons.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, as you say, that could be 3 days for some people. Yeah. It might be two weeks.
So if it's, to be clear, if it's 3 days,
yeah.
like just have your 3 days.
Yeah. You can probably avoid... you don't need to be doing repeat effort sprints, maybe.
But I think anything more than... anything more than about 5 days, you're actually, your body's this amazing adaptive machine where as soon as you take away load, as soon as you take away impact force, ground reaction force, the body goes, oh, well, you won't be needing those tendons. it just de-adapts so rapidly because it's ultimately about conserving it. Like it wants to conserve energy and so it doesn't want to have to carry a muscle that's expensive. It wants to... it just wants to de-adapt very rapidly. Yep. So a little bit of stimulus to keep it going is great. Yeah,
I've been gradually de-adapting my body, as it turns out, over 25 years. It is amazing how quickly you can lose that level of fitness, though.
Yeah.
I mean, we look at kids at trials at the moment, and they can go up and down twice after having 3 or 4 weeks off.
Well, yeah, it's
and amazing. They are gassed really quickly.
And your aerobic fitness has some loyalty. So if you build an aerobic base, that has some loyalty. But the thing is, basketball is anaerobic. And so you're really reliant on the enzymes that buffer the metabolic, so the system of the anaerobic system of energy. You need your enzymes to actually buffer the waste products, and that drops off like really rapidly. So we in the gym again, we're talking to all our athletes about make sure you've got your enzymes when you need them.
Okay.
So that can be doing 8 and 12s on the bike, where it's 8 seconds of gut busting effort, and then 12 off. So that was guaranteeing the enzymes are there for you.
Yeah.
The body, the other problem with the human body is if you do go for a long run or something, the body wants you to not work too hard. So it actually overemphasizes how hard you think you're working. So you're going for it, you send an athlete off for it. I would never send them off for a 5K run, but they go off for 5K. I prefer short distance stuff.
Yep.
But they'll go for a run, and they'll think they're working really hard, but their heart rate's like 140. And then you put them in a court situation where it's straight to 160, 170, and they're not prepared for it at all. Particularly with tryouts, because the coaches want to separate who's good to go and who's not.
Yep.
So you guys tend, if you've got a whole bunch of athletes to rapidly sort.
Yep.
A good way of sorting them is push them hard and see
who's fit, who's not, and it leads into our grading phase as well. We have trials going on at the moment, but literally in about 3 weeks' time, we need to start winning games to try and grade as high as we possibly can.
Yeah.
So do you have enough time to rebuild that fitness base if you've had a month off somewhere? And probably not always the case.
Not always the case.
That's really interesting. So probably just sort of wrapping this up, though, is there any advice you can give to athletes just in terms of their athletic development with their first starting out, injury prevention, anything along those lines? The golden rules, I suppose, from your end.
All right. So the golden rule, I reckon, is begin with the end in mind. Have a look at where you want to be in your career and make sure that your behaviours are matching your ambition, because that's the biggest issue I see is there'll be this really high ambition and the behaviour is not in alignment with that. You've got to make sure you're doing that. And if you attend to that, if you always are checking yourself and looking, going, all right, are my actions reflecting my ambitions? That's a really good start point.
Yep.
So I'll do that. And then focus on the fundamentals. Don't be in a hurry. You don't have to get strong next week. You don't have to get amazing straight away. If you can just incrementally get, 1% better every week, you'll get really good really rapidly. Attend to your rest. Get a little bit of rest. You actually bounce back when you rest. And then when you do work, I think that the trick is to put in blocks of work that are high intensity. So I think it's too easy to kind of cruise along in second gear and then be surprised when you don't have it when you need it.
Yep.
So work hard in shorter blocks at a high level. Like work at the intensity you need to be at in a game-like situation.
Yep.
And do a little bit of lifting. Lifting gets really... And just body weight lifting, that's brilliant. Don't be sucked into doing the typical teenage workout where they go to the gym and they do what Kevin Gordon used to call the California workout, the biceps and chest.
Yeah. Throw weights around and hope for the best.
Yeah. Like be a little structured, do 3 sets of a thing. You might do 3 sets of push-ups, supersetted with 3 sets of squats, and then 3 sets of calves. that's a really good basic workout. Yep. Provided it's not causing soreness. So if you're squatting and your knee hurts, that's not because squats are bad. That's because your knee has a problem. So get that attended to.
Yeah.
But take the long view, I think. You know, take your time and get good slowly but consistently.
Yeah. That's excellent. Right. Thanks very much for coming in today. I really appreciate your time with this. Great resource for coaches to have as well. Like I said earlier, jump on the Core Advantage Facebook page. There is a heap of information on there as well. Any questions you've got, flick them through to myself or Durham, the guys at Core Advantage. Always happy to help out.
We're pretty responsive to the comments as well. So if you have a comment on a thing, we'll see it and we'll respond to that as well. So that's pretty handy. And also, I should mention our website. So we've got all of our back catalogue of blog articles and all that stuff is there as well. So there's plenty of info there.
Exactly. No, it's fantastic. And I think the more time we can put into getting our athletes fit and healthy, the more time we can have them on court, and hopefully the better basketballs we have. It's an injury-free athlete is a very happy athlete.
I like it.
Yeah, that's it. So thanks very much for coming. We'll catch up with you soon again.
Pleasure. Thank you.